everybody, Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy heard every Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight we're going to listen to a second collection of highlights from the News from Lake Wobegon by Garrison Keillor. Garrison Keillor is one of America's great storytellers and the host of radio's Prairie Home Companion, which is heard here in L.A. on KUSC at 6 o'clock on Saturday evenings. And it's mainly a musical variety show featuring musical performances and fictitious commercials for products such as Powdermilk Biscuits and Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery. But the highlight of every program is always Garrison Keillor's monologues, the News from Lake Wobegon. And we'll be hearing excerpts from some of those tonight and maybe one or two of the commercials. These come from a four-cassette set of the News from Lake Wobegon, which I've actually seen for sale at Rhino Records. But at the end of the program, I'll give you an address that you can write to Minnesota Public Radio to get their catalog. It's actually a fun catalog to get anyway. It's a good mailing list to be on. And at any rate, let's start off with one of the News from Lake Wobegon pieces having to do with Flag Day.
Flag Day in Lake Wobegon. I don't know if it's observed here in the cities, but it is in Lake Wobegon. The Chamber of Commerce still has some flags on the poles with the nails at the end you can stick into the ground out in front of your house. You want to see Dwayne down at the Feed and Seed, or stop by Skoglund's yet this evening and pick up yours. I believe that is all that they do on Flag Day, is just fly flags in Lake Wobegon. I can't really think of what else you could do on Flag Day. Though they did used to do more. Seems to me I heard that back in 1936, about 400 people in Lake Wobegon put on red, white, and blue caps, and they formed what they called a living flag out on Main Street. The problem was that there were so many people in the living flag, there weren't many people left over to appreciate it. But they did it. I think it was the idea of a traveling cap salesman who came through town. But Hjalmar Engquist more or less organized it. And he didn't see why anybody should have to see it. He thought it was a patriotic thing, and it should be enough for people just to realize that they were a part of the living flag. But as they were standing there on Main Street, of course, somebody broke ranks, and they said, "Excuse me, I'll be right back." And they went and ran up on the roof of the central building right there, and they stood up there and looked down on it, and they said, "Oh, it's beautiful. You ought to see it." And then, of course, everybody had to have a look. It took hours. One person at a time, leaving the living flag and running up to the roof of the central building up there and looking down at it and admiring it. And of course, after a while, the people who had already had their look were saying, "Okay, that's it now. We can go home." And the people who didn't have a look were saying, "Hey, hold on now. We didn't get our chance." So every single last one of them had to go up there one at a time. And tempers were running short. And the living flag was becoming sort of a sitting and kneeling flag. It was a warm June afternoon. Until finally they came down to Mrs. Quigley, who was the last one. And they said, "All right, go now, Mary. Go now and make it quick." And she said, "Oh, no." She said, "I don't want you to go to any trouble on my account." She said, "I don't need to." They said, "Go look at it. Go look at the flag, would you now?" She said, "Oh, no, I've seen flags before, and I don't need to look at this one." The whole lower right-hand corner of that flag grabbed her, and they hustled her up the stairs and up on the roof of the central building, and they leaned her out, and they made her look down at it. And then, of course, somebody thought they would run home and get a camera. So that's why they don't do much for Flag Day anymore in Lake Wobegon. But they will be flying the flag tomorrow, Services be tomorrow at Lake Wobegon Lutheran at 10:30, Sunday school at 9:45. Pastor Enquist will be speaking on signs of things to come, which leads me to believe he may not have written all of that sermon by the time it went into the bulletin. At Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility, Mass is at 8 and 10 tomorrow. Father Emil is back from his vacation, his tour of Civil War battlefields. And so it is also the end of vacation for the parish, which has sat through and enjoyed the sermons of Father Frank from the seminary these past three Sundays. Sort of rambling sermons that have had a lot to do with his experiences in the Las Vegas diocese and spiritual lessons gained while playing golf out there. Father Emil is back, and his sermon is entitled A Call to Arms, and I'm sure that he's going to give it. Well, that's the news from Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, where all the women are strong and all the men are good-looking and all the children are above average. Ice fishing season is in full swing. Up there is up on New Year's Eve day, walking around town. About 100 little ice fishing houses out there on the lake, the suburbs of Lake Wobegon, what they call it. Walking down the street, I could hear guys out there laughing. Couldn't hear what they were saying, just hear laughter out there in the dark, out on the lake. These are little houses, I'd say about 8 by 10 plywood houses. You got corners, holes in the corners there, and then they put the hole down in the ice in each of them to go sit in there in the dark and fish. Supposedly, though, I think everybody knows, it's no secret, not giving away anything, to say that those are little lodges out there, actually. It's where guys go to be by themselves or to be with other guys and to get away from to get away from women would be the frank truth of it. I remember the first time I went, I was about 14. My Uncle Ralph took me with another uncle and some of the cousins. Came by, picked me up about 8 o'clock in the evening, said, "Fish are biting good. Do you want to go out there and spend the night out there and catch a bunch?" And I thought, I sort of took him at his word. But then we went out and we sat in the house, lit a fire in the wood stove, and the guys dropped their drop lines down into the holes and kind of forgot about them. Most of the time they were in the water without any bait at the end. You could just see these old guys loosen up out there, sit around, drink coffee, talk that you couldn't talk back in the house. I remember my Uncle Ralph told me a joke. It was an awfully racy joke for him. I was just astounded to hear this from him. He says, "You know, Gary," he says, "one way you catch fish, you know, you take a can of peas and you open it up, you put the peas around the hole. When a fish comes up, take a pea, you grab them." Boy, that was some joke. Whew. He never would have said that in front of Aunt Florence. I tell you, she wouldn't have stood for such a thing and her house, but it was kind of an honor that he would trust me with that joke. To know, you see, that I could hear him tell that and know that it didn't mean that he was not a Christian, which he was. It was just that sometimes our Christian faith got a little tight and there were women who took the faith as a license to straighten guys out a little bit and to make them be nice and to rid them of unclean things or untidy things.
and sometimes it just got a little tight. Now, the women were right to do it. I don't mean to suggest they weren't, because a lot of those guys left to their own, you know, would have made just a wreckage of everything. Remember my Uncle Ralph clearing his throat at the dinner table. I'm not going to do it for you right now. I remember him clearing his throat and Aunt Florence looking at him with just utter disgust. If looks could kill, that one would have wiped out a neighborhood. Sounded like he was clearing more than his throat. He was clearing his head, clearing his whole upper chest cavity. But out at the ice house, you see, you could do that. Guys go out there and just let it fly. And be loose and tell lies and chew snooze and spit when you want to. And when the mood would seize you, you know, you'd go out, take a leak out in the snow out by the back of the thing. Crude subject, I suppose, some people, but I remember it. Going out there with the others. It was a moment of brotherhood for a boy. A boy filled with all those fears and doubts. To see that at least in cold weather, all men are created equal. But I'm not going to talk about that. I was not going to get on to the subject. Well, sir, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota. It's been rather warm all week and rather dry as well, so that the grass is brown where there is no shade. And whenever a car comes down the county road, why, a big cloud of dust boils up behind it. The dog days of summer, what we called them. And it was about this time in the summer when we used to clip our old dog Buster. He was a long-haired dog. We used to spend some time at it with shears because we never could quite get it even all the way around, so we'd keep clipping him until we had him cut right down to the stubble, pretty much. Kind of a dog hiney, which he seemed to enjoy. And we didn't have air conditioners then either because... Well, for many reasons, but for one thing, if you work in the sun, the shade is cool enough for you. You don't need it to be any cooler. The Inquists had an air conditioner, but they were rich, and Mrs. Inquist was in poor health, though I must say she's been in poor health for about 40 years now. And finally, it was about 20 years ago that Father Emil got himself one, but he had terrible hay fever. And got all puffed up during the summer and would go around with a hanky in one hand more or less all the time and would have to spend a couple weeks up at the North Shore to get some relief. And after a couple weeks up there by himself with all that scenery, he got bored and came back and eventually got an air conditioner, put it in the rectory, spent about 2 weeks up close to it, and never felt better. It was when Mrs. Diener got an air conditioner that people started to talk. There was nothing wrong with her. Who did she think she was? She said that she got it for her daughter because her daughter would break into a heat rash. But her daughter only came to visit for a couple weeks in the summer. And she always came in June. So what did she need it for? Mrs. Diener said, well, she said, as long as I've got to have it, I might as well get the use of it. So would run it all summer next door to us, where we sat on the porch, listening to that thing humming away. And I decided that an air conditioner was something I'd dearly love to have. I'd ask for one. I'd complain about the heat. The more I listened to Mrs. Diener's air conditioner, the hotter I felt. And my mother would say, make the best of it. She'd say, life is what you make it, which was always her answer to any complaints of unhappiness. Life is what you make it. Make the best of it. Well, I felt that seemed to point towards getting an air conditioner. Mrs. Diener had made the best of it. My mother said, go outside, do something, take your mind off it, which was her second answer to unhappiness. But you see, I'd been outside all morning in the garden picking vegetables. I was not about to go outside again. If I did, I knew darn well what I'd find to do out there. More tomatoes. This is the time of year when the gardens start coming on hard and fast in Lake Wobegon. And when gardeners start to feel that vegetables are taking over their lives, that they started something out back of the house that they're not in control of anymore. They planted a glacier out back there. It's moving in on them. Their tomatoes moving in. Get up one morning, your whole kitchen full of tomatoes lying around on counters. Some of them have crept down onto the floor, making their way upstairs. Reach for your toothbrush. You might pick up an eggplant or something. Be right there. Well, how'd that get there? Pick up a newspaper. There'd be three zucchini underneath it. I went under there for the shade or to read the comics. Catch a couple Z's. Dreams of vegetables, watermelon vines coming at you with their little spiny fingers. Those watermelons that you planted last year. 12 hills. Why did we plant 12 hills of watermelons? And why did we pick the big Berthas, the big 40-pounders? I guess we were worried we wouldn't have enough. We wanted to have extra so we could give some away to the relatives. But the relatives all have extra. You start to wonder. It's the time of year when people take vegetables around to their neighbors' houses late at night. Put it on the steps. Back in April, you'd kill for a tomato. You would. Real tomato. I mean, not those little tomatoes that they strip mine down in Texas. But real tomatoes that taste like tomatoes. Not styrofoam with tomato flavoring, but real tomatoes. Back in April, you imagine how good they'd taste, and so you go out and you put in 40 tomato plants. My mother would put in 40 tomato plants. And we ate tomatoes. Morning, noon, night, and for years thereafter. Stewed tomatoes was my mother's soul food. I remember going out on a morning in early August with my brother and sister to pick tomatoes. The kitchen was full of tomatoes, but we were going to pick some more anyway. You're supposed to pick them, can't waste them. Pick them, bring them in, let them sit there. Maybe they'll climb into the jars themselves. I had been picking tomatoes for a week. I went outside, and there they were. Full. The plants were full of red tomatoes. They were also full of green tomatoes, which would become red shortly. This would be my life, picking tomatoes. Well, the three of us, my brother, sister, and I, got lined up on the row of tomatoes and started picking them. I picked a big tomato, and I stood up and I threw it as hard as I could against a crab apple tree, where it made a wonderful splatty sound. Picked up another one, biggest one I could find. And I threw it again. I took out 3-4 crab apples with each one, sort of killing two foods with one tomato. Then I threw one at my brother. Little hard green one. He threw one back at me. We ducked down by the row there of the plants. We were heaving tomatoes back and forth at us. My sister, who was a good person, looked at us and said, you're going to get in trouble. And then she went back to work. She bent over and started picking. What a target. There she was, bent over. I picked up the biggest tomato I could find. One so big had been lying on the ground for weeks. Gotten all brown underneath. Worms in it. It was real juicy. It's hard to pick it up without getting it all over yourself, you know? I picked it up and I took aim. And I went into my windup. And just at the moment that I was about to throw it, my mother called to me from the kitchen window in a sharp voice, and I had to decide what to do. I think I made the right decision, because the sound of that tomato hitting right on target is a sound that a person doesn't get to hear often in their life. It's a beautiful, sort of a flat, watery, squishy sound as it came in right on the mark. And my sister let out a ha! And yelled at me. Oh, it was a beautiful sound, like a fat man taking a belly flop. Just full, luscious sound. She took off after me, my sister did. She was inspired. I never saw her run so fast. I could usually outrun her, but she had wings. I ran as fast as I could towards the house, yelling, "Mother, mother, mother." But she was faster than I was, and she grabbed hold of me, and she was just about to pound me into the ground when my mother spoke to her sharply from the kitchen window. And my sister, who is a good person and obedient, let go of me. Hoping, I suppose, that my mother would come out and brain me, finish the job. But my mother just said, "That will be enough of that. Go back. Get busy." My poor sister. She was so angry because she knew that the pleasure of obedience is nothing compared to the pleasure of throwing a rotten tomato and hitting your sister right in the butt. Nothing like it. Poor thing. Later that day, she got hold of me and she pinched me, but that was nothing. I just laughed at her. I was calling her tomato butt by then. She said, "That's a dirty word. You'll be punished for that. God will punish you for that. You better not say that again." I didn't need to say it again. It was so much fun the first time. I looked her in the eye and I said, "Don't take it so bad." I said, "Make the best of it. Life is what you make it." And then I took off. I outran her that time because I was ready. That's the news. About Powder Milk Biscuits, our sponsor in this first portion of our show. When the Powder Milk Biscuit Company heard that we were going to come out to Los Angeles and do the show, they, of course, thought they ought to send some out here and get them in the stores, which is the usual way you distribute the product before you do the advertising. So Hjalmar Enqvist had a nephew in Minneapolis who was going to come out to Laguna Beach and do a little body surfing. 1957 Chevy he had, and the trunk was available. So they took a couple of crates of big blue boxes, put them in, told him to go straight out, not stop. And he did. He came right on to the city where he'd never been before. He was in a holding pattern for a while on one of the interchanges, but at last got loose of it and headed south a little ways. And there by the road, he saw a Ralph's Grocery and figured that must be the place. He managed to get to it. And he walked about a half mile across the parking lot and went in the front door
and went up to the first official-looking person that he saw, and he said, "Here are these powder milk biscuits that I believe you might have ordered." The manager said, "No, that all their biscuits come from Connecticut. They're all manufactured out there. They ship in by rail." So all I know is that there are two crates of powder milk biscuits that are downtown at the YMCA, registered under the name of Inkfist. And here I stand as usual, without anything to show you. I tell you, it's not the worst position to be in, to stand up here on a stage, as we do every Saturday night, to remember things that I'm not really sure actually happened. And all of it taking place in a little town that is real so long as you don't go looking for it. And all of it brought to you by a product that you can't even buy around here. But isn't that the case that most of what we need, really need, is either invisible or out of supply or out of fashion, on the decline? Sometimes a person just has to make do with imagination. It's imagination that got us into this problem anyway. And I believe it can get us out. Powder milk biscuits. I knew I was going to say that sooner or later. Here, just waiting until it sprang to my lips. Powder milk.
Oh, has your family tried them powder milk? Has your family tried them powder milk? Well, if your family's tried them, you'll know you've satisfied them. They're the real hot item, powder milk.
Has your family tried a powder mill? Well, if your friends tried them, you know it's satisfied them. They're the real hot out of powder mill.
Powder milk biscuits. Heavens, they're tasty. And expedition.
Okay, that's going to have to wrap up this edition of Funny Stuff featuring Garrison Keillor, the host of Prairie Home Companion and a writer for The New Yorker, among other things. Now, that address, I promise you, is Minnesota Public Radio, Department M, 45 East 8th Street, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55101. And that's if you want to get their catalog. It's a lot of fun to get. As I say, though, I've also seen this set of four cassettes available at Rhino Records, and it's a real treasure. Let's see, what else is there to tell you? Next week's program is going to be sort of unusual, featuring the Marx Brothers. I'll dig up some rare records and also play you some radio stuff. It should be a lot of fun. What else? The address, my address, is Bob Claster, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California. And I'd love to hear from you, no matter what you have to say. You love the show, you hate the show, you've got an idea for me, or whatever. And until then, until next week, when I feature the Marx Brothers, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Isn't that true, Sarah?
Yes, Bob, it is. Boy, he caught me on that one. Did anybody happen to notice that the music was a little different this week? And if you did, you can either call or write Bob and let him know that you liked it. I did. It's kind of cute. Funny Stuff is heard on KCRW Playhouse every Friday at 7:30 p.m. You can get a good chuckle just before the weekend begins.